My name is Randy Ross, and I'm a psychologist, believe it or not, from Minnesota, another Minnesota person. I said to the staff the other night at the meeting, I was really excited when I was coming out here thinking, I'm going to be from Minnesota, and that's going to be really exciting and new and different thing. And to get here and find out that 3/4 of the people here are from Minnesota, and that in fact is probably pretty boring for someone here. So, at any rate, I live in Minnesota, in St. Paul, Minnesota, actually, and I work at the College of St. Thomas. When I left, it was the College of St. Thomas. When I return, it will be the University of St. Thomas. We're undergoing a name change at this point. And I work there in the Counseling and Career Service Center, a college counseling center for most practical purposes. I do a number of things there. My official title is Coordinator of Consultation and Outreach Services. In other words, the kind of outreach that we do into the college community and also into the Twin City community. So that's what I do. I've done a lot of work with career sorts of things. It's a research interest area of mine, as well as having worked in a number of career kinds of centers. I worked in 3 or 4 other college settings in addition to St. Thomas. And I've also worked in some business and industry kinds of settings where I've done some work in employee assistance programs and in training and development. So this kind of topic is a real interesting one for me. I have to be honest that it's especially exciting for me to get to come and do it at a place like Holden, where you can talk about it, I think, in a more holistic approach. And what I mean by that is that I think oftentimes we run into a problem with this topic of career where we want to talk just about people's jobs. And I wish it was that simple. I wish that I could put people in the right jobs and have them be happy people. But I really think that our lives are a lot bigger than that. And I think what I hear at Holden is sort of a more open stance, if you will, to that notion that we can be holistic in how we talk about some of these topics. So we've titled this session, interestingly enough, Understanding Your Gifts, because I really think that, again, in a place like Holden where we can talk about spirituality, it's important to think about ourselves as having gifts, as being unique, as being different from other people, and as understanding exactly how those gifts fit, not only with career, but overall in our lives, in terms of how we're going to end up being happy and productive folks. That's a little bit of what we'll use as a frame as we start talking today. What I want to do today is to share some information. Somebody asked us as we were coming in, are we going to have to take career tests? And we're not going to take career tests. Actually, being, again, a good psychologist from the Dust Bowl of empiricism in Minnesota, of course I would love to give you all career tests, but we're not going to do that this afternoon. Part of that problem, it fits with something else I want to say, and that's that we do have a limited amount of time. If I was doing career counseling with any one of you, we'd probably spend 6 to 8 weeks, an hour a week, doing what we're going to do here in a few minutes this afternoon. So the way I want to approach this afternoon is, again, not knowing all of you or exactly where you're at, what I want to do is to leave you with some questions. I want to give you a bit of a model, if you will, to how you think about putting together your career, your life, with those gifts that you have or that you might want to have at some point in your life. And then, in addition, giving you some questions that will help you think about that model that we're going to be using as we walk through this afternoon. What I do want to do, even though this group is getting bigger by the second here, I want to spend just a couple minutes actually finding out who's here. And we can do that real quickly. I want to know a couple things, if I could. You could just say your name, something about what you're doing right now in your life. And I do want to say up front that it's perfectly okay to say, I don't know what I'm doing, or I'm not sure, because I say that all the time. Or I don't know what I want to be when I grow up, that's fine. I want you to answer another question. I want everybody to think before anyone starts. I want you to think about, reflect back, what did you want to be when you were a kid? What thing stands out as that occupation, that job, that life goal that you really looked to as a kid? Think about that for a second. And we'll start, can we start over here? Go ahead.
My name is Ron Osborne. I'm a retired high school counselor, so I've been through the very same things that you're talking about.
Okay.
Your question is very appropriate because time and time again I go through the thing where most kids have no idea what they're going to do, and the frustration is that parents want them to make a decision and it's impossible for them to happen. Patience.
Exactly. What did you want to be when you were a kid?
I have no idea.
You don't remember?
I don't remember at all.
Okay. I encourage you to think about that, because it will come back to you if you think about it. It's interesting, because at lunch today, are those parents here? I had lunch with, nope, they're not. at lunches for parents who did just that to me, who had kids in college and said, gosh, you can tell us what our kids should be. And I said, oh no, I can't. Their kids are back, by the way, at PLU. They're off at PLU and they want me up here in the mountains to decide. I said, no, that's fine. How about back here? We're just saying your name and what you do and what you wanted to be when you were a kid, if you can recall that.
Should I cheat?
No.
What, well, I mean, how old of a kid?
Any age.
Okay, well, when I first became aware,
sure.
Okay, my name's Don Post, and when I first became aware that I had to be something, I wanted to be a makeup artist.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's neat.
And I'm not a makeup artist, I make Halloween masks. But I do make up special effects, though, sometimes.
Great. That's pretty close. I mean, most people don't come that close to what they remember. That's good. Great. How about you?
Well, I'm a long ways from what I wanted to be. My name's Nancy Post, and I'm a church receptionist at our church. And I wanted to be a hairstylist.
Okay. Great. How about back here?
My name is Mohsen. And I work as a chemical dependency counselor, and I've been doing this for about 10 years now. It's only been the last 4 or 5 years that I felt comfortable being in those work. I had no idea what I wanted to be. I just wanted to be rich.
Rich and famous. Well, that's something. Okay.
Yeah. So.
Okay, good. Great, thanks.
Al Todman. I probably teach biology in high school, and I wanted to be a commercial fisherman in Alaska.
Really?
I'm from Minnesota also.
Okay, good. It's a long ways. My brother wanted to always move to Alaska too. Made my parents nervous. Now they wish he would someday. He's still in the Midwest. How about you?
I'm Gary Hill. I work as vice president and treasurer of a bank, and I recognize I have a saying what I want to be with the forestry for a long time, but I have a very strong feeling.
Okay.
Good. Yeah. I'm Phyllis Hill, and I work for the school system, but I work with computers and teachers and a little bit of everything. And I guess when I was a kid, I wanted to be an airline stewardess.
Okay. How about up here?
Yeah. I'm not sure you want to hear about me. I've been retired so many years that...
That's all right. So you retired.
Anyway, you know, definitely, the only thing that I can remember is when I graduated from high school, my aim in life was to get... Now laugh. Get married and have 12 children.
Did you?
I did. No.
No, you didn't have 12?
God didn't see it fit to give me any, I guess. I had my husband over 5 years and he was killed. And I never had any,
okay.
Consequently. So I guess that that's about the way it goes. But I've had a very good life anyway. I can't complain about it.
Great.
I had a lot of other family to love and a lot of people that had babies for me to love, so I didn't have to worry about my
own. Good. How about you?
I'm Andrew Miracle, and I just graduated with a French International Relations degree. And I was going to go on to grad school, but I just applied for a winter position here, and hopefully we'll be in a week. And I wanted to be a brain surgeon.
Wow. That's what I always remember. Jethro Bodine on the Beverly Hillbillies wanted to be a brain surgeon. Yeah. How about you?
I'm Patty Beach. I just finished a master's program in public policy, so I've been doing a lot of research and writing for the past 2 years. And I guess I remember wanting to be a teacher.
Okay. We'll keep coming. Yeah, we'll keep coming.
Okay. I'm Judy Nolde, and I'll be starting my first year of law school this fall, so I'm very excited and very scared about that. I really don't know what I wanted to be other than I love to travel. I've always enjoyed other cultures, so.
I'm Nancy Straka, and I am a student at the University of Northern Iowa, and I always wanted to be a nurse.
I'm Frank Guess, and I'm a Montessori teacher,
And this past spring, I really questioned whether that's what I wanted to do and decided that is what I wanted to do. And now I'm trying to figure out where I want to do it. Okay. Oh, and as a kid, I specifically being asked one time, like in second grade, the pastor or somebody come in saying, you know, what do you want, all want to do when you grew up? And I didn't know. And I thought I wanted to be a fireman because I felt like, well, that's what kids always say. But I really didn't feel like I knew what I wanted to do.
That's an interesting pressure. It's a lot of pressure kids get to be forced to say something. A lot of kids, actually, we know that developmental psychology tells us anyway that kids' first recollections about, or first impressions about what they want to be are usually inanimate objects. So we get a lot of kids who say, I want to be a fire truck. So maybe that's what you thought.
My name is Terry, and I'm in school, in art school, in art program. And when I was a kid, I wanted to be a farmer, and other things.
My name is Leah Bork, and I'm currently working for the Eddie Bauer Company and going back to school to finish my degree. And the only thing I can think of is wanting to be a model.
Okay.
Hi, Mary Ann Bork. I think I've always wanted to be a teacher. Right now I'm in a parapro in a school district with a 4-year elementary degree.
Okay.
My name is Megan Schneider, and I want to be a psychologist.
Right. Megan, were you in the relaxation thing the other day?
Yeah.
Megan was in the group of like 20 12 to 18-year-olds that I did relaxation with the other day, and they all were quiet for an hour and a half. Their director was shocked. They were wonderful. How about you?
I'm Judy Custer, and I work in a family and sports medicine office as a nurse, and I wanted to be a nurse when
did
I grew
you?
Up.
Yeah.
I'm Daphne Schneider. I wanted to be a nurse when I grew up. And yes, I did. I really did. And I instead received a degree in home economics and a master's in teaching the deaf. And I'm not a part of this week at all with the deaf, but and the program I took was an oral program, not a signing program. I taught the hearing impaired. I wanted to teach home economics to the deaf, but I actually taught preschool primary children, which I love. And now I do as little substitute teaching as I possibly can. I stayed home and raised a family, that being one. And now what I do is some substituting, and mostly I paint, do decorative painting, and teach painting classes and things like that. And volunteer, those kind of things.
Good for you.
And I'm happy.
Sounds like it. Good. How about you?
I'm Ted Insland. I've spent a career in the research and engineering aspect of a manufacturing company for the last 20 years in management, and I'm scheduled to retire on September 1. When I was a kid, I just assumed, I didn't know that I wanted to be a farmer, but all the other kids in the community I grew up with would be farmers. But World War II came along and changed all that for me.
Yeah. Good. Great. Oh, can we go to the back there? Yeah, you.
Back here. Okay. I'm Sally. And I was trying to think, what was it I wanted to be when I was little? And I remember always saying I wanted to be an astronomer. I don't know if I knew what that was. It just probably sounded really good. And then actually, being female in that generation, what was more attainable to me was to become a teacher. And I think I became a teacher. I think I went to teacher training school because my very best friend went. Fortunately, it turned out to be something I enjoyed. And so I've been most recently teaching pre-primary impaired children until a year ago last June when my husband retired from special ed. And we happened upon Holden and have been happily here ever since for the last year, but are definitely going off in a different direction. And that's pretty open, and we aren't really sure in which direction we will go.
Good, thanks.
I'm Kathy Mullen. I'm a homemaker. I don't know if anybody else said that everyone else seems to be involved in different types of careers here. But the first thing I can remember wanting to be was a window display decorator. I think that I had read a novel of, you know, how that influences you during those teen years. And then later I thought I wanted to be a social worker. And I did go to college and started towards that end. Then worked as a secretary in an insurance company and got married. And have done a lot of volunteer work. And it's probably been a lot influenced by that interest in social media.
Great, good. Mm-hmm. I'm glad you did something that I'm very glad about. When I do workshops like this, I make a rule usually when I start that I never want anyone to say I'm just a homemaker. And you didn't.
I'm very, very happy.
Glad to hear that. Good.
I feel very
a very real career, as you know, right?
Well, it is.
Exactly.
You know, I feel like it's been a privilege to have been in that place. Because I think that young people today don't always have that choice.
Mm-hmm. Very true. Good. What next?
I'm Nancy Farrell, and I guess I always wanted to be a teacher. All my parents were teachers, and so I have taught a little bit on the side.
Good. Good for you. Great. Thanks. How about right here?
My name is Betty Foster, and as a young lady, I wanted to be an airline hostess. That was the most glamorous thing I could think of. And I became a teacher. And in three more years, I will be retiring after having taught for 25 years and enjoyed every day.
Good for you. Great.
And I'm Eva Locker, and I had always wanted to be a teacher as a young child. I remember in the first and second grade, and I became a teacher. It was nice, and I got a long career and retired.
All right, good.
My name is Pam, and I like to just follow the crowd, so I'm the teacher.
And you wanted to be one.
Yeah, I always wanted to be one, too. I teach special education.
Okay. We're not going to do the top row, because I heard rumor that anyone who sits on the top doesn't want to be bothered, so I won't bother you all of you. Is that true? We'll keep going, and if you want to jump in, please do with your questions. And I'm supposed to say that the tape people can start. They're in another room, by the way. You all missed this little mistake that I did before. I didn't know that someone had headphones on in the other room, so I took the microphone and banged it around. She came streaming into the room and said, "Don't do that." She was very gracious about it, much more than I would have probably. Good. I do that exercise because I want us, again, to, as we go through today, keep one thought in mind. You are very different than anybody else in this room. For whatever reason, you had those thoughts as a kid. That's real good data. How close are you to where you wanted to be? We had a row back here of 1, 2, 3 who said they wanted to be teachers and, in fact, were. Guy here who had a real interesting wish as a child or doing something like it. You know, I mean, it's good to see that we all have some recollection of that. You can think about that as data. We're different than other people in terms of career. Let's keep that in mind. For those of you who came late, what I mentioned as we started was that we're going to talk a little bit about a model that can help us do some planning around career and life sorts of things. And we're going to use that model to ask some questions this afternoon to let you sort of walk out with those questions and use the beautiful mountains here to go ponder them a little bit. So that's where we'll start. What I want to do to start then is present this model, and I've got it a couple of places. Actually, I think I'll just use the board. Can you see the board? I was worried about the light. Is it okay in this room? It wasn't last time I did something. It's okay. The model I want to use is a real basic one, and it's really, I think, the kind of model from which we take a lot of other career theory models, and it's one we call the person-environment fit model. And the idea is that if we want people who are going to be happy, productive, okay people with their lives, we need to figure out how we can take them, the person, and fit them with different kinds of environments. And on one hand, yes, this is related specifically to work, but it also can flow over into life, and we'll talk about that as we go through today. So if you will, what we've done here is, if you can look at my bad drawing, made a puzzle, sort of. And the pieces that are going together, on one hand, we have the world of work. And then we've got the person, or you. What we say about this part that we call you is that really we have something that we call a vocational identity. And again, if we were doing this a strict career kind of theory, which you probably would use with your students, and talking only about your career planning, we'd say that this is your career identity. But I use the word vocation to really talk more about you overall and your entire life, not just what you do. You can see that I've drawn these slash lines here on the world of work or the real world part, because I want you to recognize that in a lot of ways, that is set. There are certain kinds of jobs out there that offer certain things, certain kinds of environments, certain kinds of activities that are pretty much set. And what your task as you go through life is, in finding that kind of job that's going to satisfy you, is to find a place where you fit. Find that jigsaw fit that works best for you. And to do that, we look at a couple of different things. Let me jot these down here. Oops. It's a different order. Interests, skills, and values. And again, I think that this model really helps us to understand that we are a lot more complex than just what do you want to be, what do you want to do, what do you like to do. As we walk through today, we're going to use this as our outline. We're going to talk about each of these three parts that sort of make up, if you will, your vocational identity. Anybody used this model before? I'm sure you have. You've seen it before. Anybody else look at a model like this? Okay. For those of you who might have come in late, I passed around. Is the paper still anywhere to be found? If you want to shift that around, we're going to be having you jot a few things down. I've got some more up here if you need to use that. Let's start with that thing that we call interests. Career interests or vocational interests are really a measure of things that you like or prefer to do. When we talk about career interests, it's real important that we keep very clear about the idea that interests are not things that you're necessarily good at, but things that you like to do, that you prefer to do. When we talk about skills, we talk about, in fact, those things that you can do, those activities, those abilities that are, in fact, within your grasp, those things that you can do. And finally, we have another thing that we call values. And in terms of vocation, when we say values, we're talking about those areas of your life that you believe strongly about, those things that you find to be very important for you. As I describe those three here briefly for you, if they begin to sound at all alike, that's okay. It's one of those chicken, egg, cart before the horse kinds of questions. We're not exactly sure which one leads to which. And they are sort of gray, but we do believe, in terms of theory anyway, that we can separate them and talk about them differently. And that's what we'll do this afternoon. Okay. So let's start with interests, those things that you like to do. If I had you for a weekend-long retreat on career and life planning, I would do an exercise at this point. I would go out in the yard out here somewhere and draw a six-sided figure and put some letters down on the ground, and we'd do an activity. What I would tell you is that if you walked into a party, and this party was going to be a weekend-long kind of event, and I told you that there were different kinds of people gathered in different corners of that figure that was on the ground, and you had to go and join one of them, which would you want to spend the weekend with? Okay, that's the activity I do. So imagine that as I tell you about this model that we're going to use. Career interests are best described by a person whose name is John Holland. And Holland's theory is that we can take the entire world of work, or all people's work personalities, and divide them up into sort of a hexagon, if you will, or six different areas. Okay, what I want to do is to walk through and describe these a little bit for yourself. And again, imagine that you're picking which group you want to join this afternoon, or for the weekend-long event. The first type that Holland talks about is the R theme, or something we call realistic. Realistic work environments, or realistic work interests, are interests that involve physical kinds of activity. People who like to get outside, get dirty, get rough, do some kind of strenuous or detailed kind of activity that involves their body in some way. Traditional or careers that fit under this realistic thing would be carpentry, electricians, farmers, forest rangers, military personnel. Again, those folks who like to do something physical in terms of their activity. The next theme in terms of career interest that we talk about is what we call investigative. This is one I can never spell, so. Investigative, or the I theme, are those folks who really do enjoy investigating or researching or discovering kinds of activities. That's what they prefer in their work. People who like to make discoveries in a scientific sense. And so we find traditional activities that, or careers that fall here, like biologists, physiologists, chemists. We also find folks who would be doing other kinds of research, like librarians or philosophers, perhaps. Again, people who enjoy making discoveries, who enjoy using ideas and thinking about ways that they might discover new solutions, for instance. Okay, that's the investigative type of career interest. A third type that we often talk about is one we call artistic, or the A theme. And artistic is pretty much what you might guess. These are folks who enjoy being expressive or expressing themselves artistically in relation to the world, or that they enjoy environments where people are expressing themselves artistically. And again, as you might guess with a word like art, we find traditional fields of art like acting, painting, sculpting, singing, dancing, those kinds of things. We also pick up a bit of the kinds of interests that are seen with folks who like public speaking, for instance, or commentating on TV, for instance. Again, those are some of the artistic, expressive kinds of interests that we find with the A theme. What you can see to this point is that we've talked about people who like working with things, people who like working with ideas, with these two, and being expressive. The bottom two themes that I want to talk about are both types that enjoy working with people, but in two very, very different ways. On one hand, we have the social. Oops, as the board runs away here. Social kinds of interests. I often say that these are people who have an interest in standing next to someone, okay? Standing next to another person in their work. These are folks who like to teach, guide, enlighten, foster, help other people. We find in this category our teachers back there, nurses, ministers, rabbis, priests, YMCA directors. Again, folks who like to help others, who enjoy helping others along. I said that the E theme also enjoys working with people, but again in a different way. We call this theme enterprising. And it's probably best described by traditional business kinds of activities. People who don't necessarily want to stand next to someone, but would rather sort of stand face to face. These are people who enjoy working with others, but they like to lead them, or they like to manage them, or they like to persuade them to a new way of thinking. And again, we find business types falling in this category. Politicians, political scientists fall into this category. Also lawyers, attorneys. Again, those sorts of interests would fall into what we call the enterprising category. The last thing that we talk about is the conventional theme. And these are people who enjoy having a great deal of order or direction in their work environments or the kinds of things that they do in work. I often, and again, keep in mind that I work at St. Thomas, which is a Catholic college, I often say that people who are real comfortable in conventional kinds of settings would be comfortable in the military or the Catholic Church. Places where there are very, very clear rules about who's in charge, who's on top, what are the standard operating procedures. People who enjoy knowing exactly how things fit together. People who like to make things neat, like to make systems more efficient. We find people who have a real good eye for detail would fall into this category. Things like accounting, bank tellers, secretaries, IRS agents, people who again like to find particular kinds of detail, who like to clean up systems. A lot of computer systems operators would fall into the same category. Okay. So again, that gives you a sense of what this theme is about, a way to look at it. Again, what we're talking about is interests. If you could, for yourself for a second, if you had to pick, and you're going to spend a weekend with one of these groups, where would you say you would go? Just in your own head, figure it out. Is it pretty easy to do? How many can figure it out right away? Just, I know. That's good.
Somebody, who? One?
What's that?
Can you pick one of the ones?
That's what, yeah, usually somebody asks if it's good. Yes, you can, usually people do pick more than one. And again, what we talk about with Holland, and several of you have already said that you've taken the Strong Campbell, or now it's called the Strong Interest Inventory. I was sharing with a group before, some of you got in here, Strong and Campbell had a fight. There's been a lawsuit in Minnesota. And Strong is the only one who has a name on the instrument at this point. But the Strong Interest Inventory, the Strong Campbell Interest Inventory, as it was called, does in fact measure along these dimensions. And it gives what we call a three-point code. One, two, three. And we use just those three letters, or the letters that I started with. My code, for instance, is S-E-A. All right? And what I usually do when I write my code, this is some fancy shorthand for three-point codes, I draw a line like this. And what that means is that my social and enterprising interests are very, very close. They're almost identical, as a matter of fact. And then my artistic interests fall somewhere down the road. So after you've picked your first one, and if some of you have paper you want to jot it down, it might be interesting to go ahead also then and think, what would you put for your second two? And are one or two of them very close? And again, if you ever want to take a measure of this, you can do that. Also, if you ever go to a library and you have a sense of what your code would be, there are several sources that you can use. One of them is called the DOT, quite simply, the Dictionary of Occupational Titles. And that lists every possible occupation, supposedly, that any human has ever imagined. In addition to being listed in a lot of different ways, they are also listed by Holland code. In other words, which interests are picked up in a particular activity. Okay, and if any, again, we don't have a lot of time today, but if any of you want to grab me and chat about some particular activity, go ahead and do that while I'm around. Or go ahead and look up some kind of a instrument, or pardon me, a listing like this one.
What is it a stand for again?
Dictionary of Occupational Titles. And again, if that's of interest to you, you can go ahead and do that. Okay. The other thing I should say that is, if you're a person who looks at this thing and says, this doesn't make a lot of sense to me, it feels like I would like any one of them, that's okay. What we would often say is that you're a person who has an undifferentiated profile. That can mean several things. That can mean that you don't have a lot of experience in the world of work and you're not sure what you really like yet, which is a-okay. It also might mean that you're the kind of person who's going to be very, very happy in a number of different areas. That it's not necessarily a particular area that's going to trip your trigger for you. It's not about that for you. We also find, did anyone find that they had codes that were across the hexagon for themselves? Mine, for instance, is a very logical kind of a profile. And that social, enterprising, and artistic, they're all on the same side. They're pretty close to one another. Did any of you find anything creative across? What was yours? Do you mind sharing?
I think mine's investigative, social, conventional.
Okay, yeah, and that's a real interesting kind of a combination that's across. What we would say is that it's going to be harder to match or to pick up all three of those interests in one particular occupation. But what I say to people is that there's some ways to be real creative about that. I worked with a man very recently who had very strong conventional interests and very strong artistic interests. His conventional interests were so strong, in fact, he pursued a degree in accounting. And when he got done and was looking for career counseling at the college where we worked, he was trying to figure out how he could meet some of those artistic interests. And what he did was he ended up being an accountant for several symphony orchestras in the Twin City Orchestra. So he was doing these kinds of activities in a particular kind of environment. And that made some sense for him. The other thing that I throw out at this point is that I have been talking about vocational interests or career interests. I also at this time say, but there's another thing that we call avocational interests. I'm often very careful around church groups about that. That doesn't mean we shouldn't have vocations to ministry or whatever. The folks at the Catholic College get real nervous when I say avocational. But really, in the psychology sense, what we mean by that is interests outside of work. And what I often say to people, if you have strong artistic interests, for instance, and are doing something over on this side in terms of your career, what can you do outside of work? How can you get all of your interests met at some place or point in your life? And again, that's an important thing to keep in mind. How can you balance your life as you do overall life planning? Okay. I, for instance, don't do much that's artistic in my life, per se, but that's a real strong interest for me, and I do a lot, or in my work, I should say, I do a lot of that outside. I like to go to the symphony. I like to go to art museums. I love to go to plays. So I do that outside of work. Questions about this? Questions about interests? Makes some sense. Does this fit for some of you who've taken the strong? Yeah.
Is it more difficult for a person who has a lot of different interests, you know, that really says, gee, that would be a neat area, I'd like to pursue that, but then I also like this. Is it harder for them to actually make a choice of a direction?
Yes, it would definitely be hard. And we often find people, when I talked about a second ago when I said undifferentiated, I mean, meaning that I have interest in all of these areas, sometimes those are people not necessarily who don't have experience, but that they really can't, they have trouble making decisions because they don't want to shut off any particular area. So that's real true. And those are people who I would sort of coach into looking at, again, some of those creative combinations. Is there a place where you can work with lots of different people? For instance, great example is if a person can't decide about careers, what better career than to be a career counselor, right? Where you actually get, and you're getting to do some of this probably, you get to talk with lots of different people, look at their lives, and hear about different stories all the time. That's an example. Keep in mind with this that we haven't started to talk about abilities yet. It's a real different thing, and we'll get to that in just a second. These are just your interests. What do you prefer to do? Any other comments? That was a good question. Okay, let's go on then and talk some more about, let's go back. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about skills and how you begin to assess those. I'm going to be honest that we can't spend a lot of time assessing for any one of you your skills individually this afternoon. What I say is that I want you to recognize that there are some rules that I can share that are general for all of you as we go about starting to assess skills. I'm going to take this up here. Holden has informed me, by the way. I shared with the staff coordinator that if I was doing this workshop back in Minnesota, I would have used about 80 handouts to do what I'm doing here with recycled paper. So I'm a new person in terms of recycling. Some rules as you start to think about skills. Again, keeping in mind that we're not talking about what you prefer, but here, what can you really do? What are those skills that you can call on as you figure out that vocational identity that you might want to pursue? The first rule is simply proficiency, not excellence. And what I'm trying to drive at with that simple three-word statement is the idea that we do not have to be great at something to have it be a skill for us. There's some myth, and again, lots of research supports this, that in our American culture that we somehow believe we have to be very good at something for it to be a skill. And in fact, we know that isn't true. We know that's not the case. An example that I often share at this point is that I, to work my way through college and grad school, worked as a pool manager, a lifeguard and a pool manager. A part of that job was that at the end of every day I had to balance the books, the number of people who came in, and we had to order candy and do all these kinds of things. I know how to balance books, and I know how to count money. I do not like it, any stretch of the imagination. That's a real conventional interest, which I have about zero. Right? I don't like it, and I'm not very fast at it, but I do know how to do it. I am proficient at it. And again, so when you start thinking about your skills, think about what can I do, not what am I great at. Another good example that I've shared this week is I'm working down at Narnia while I'm here at Holden. I cannot sing very well, not well enough to do the Messiah solos last night, but I can sing well enough to stand up in front of 4 to 6-year-olds. They don't know the difference, right? You know, I mean, again, I'm not great at it, but I can do it. I mean, I can fake my way through it. Kids don't know the difference. It's wonderful. So, again, as you start to think about your skills, you don't have to be great at something. Just okay at it. Just all right. Secondly, and this fits with what I've been saying about the interests versus skills. Capability, not enjoyment, is the rule. And by that I mean, are there things that you might necessarily not enjoy, but that you can do? Okay? And again, I go back to that example of the pool lifeguard kind of situation that I was in. I didn't necessarily enjoy counting money, but in fact, I can do it. It's important for me as I think about what kind of job might I take on. Is there something like that that I can do? And the third rule that I often mention is one that I call transfer, not direct experience. if you do any reading at all about careers, or if you ended up in doing any kind of career counseling, one of the things that you'd hear about is the idea of transferable job skills. Anybody heard that buzz phrase in any articles? The notion that we do not necessarily have to have direct experience with something, but we have to be able to demonstrate as we move from job to job that we can transfer skills across settings. What we know about people who are between 20 and 30 right now, 20 and 30 years of age, is that you will, on the average, shift careers 3.5 to 4.5 times in your life. That doesn't mean you'll get a promotion within the same office. That means you will make at least, or on the average, I should say, 3.5 major career shifts. For some, I'm looking at some of the people who I think are under 30. All of you are under 30, right? Yeah, okay. At any rate, what we know about that is then that this idea of transferable job skills has become more and more important. What we say to people is that you don't necessarily have to have worked in a particular place to be able to transfer some skills into that setting. What we run into often is what we call the experience trap. Have any of you ever searched for a job and had people say, "I'm sorry, you just don't have enough experience working in our particular office"? Anybody have that experience yet? Some of you already. Just don't have enough experience. What I say to people of that is that I call that quite directly the experience trap. The idea that people will tell us, have you ever seen that commercial? It was on several years ago, where there's a person sitting at a desk and it's a profile from the back, you don't know who it is. He's talking about his job skills, and they say, "You don't exactly have what we need," and then it zooms around and it's Abraham Lincoln. Have you seen that? You remember that commercial of a few years ago? That same kind of thing. Who would we turn down? What I encourage people to do is to spend some time before you go into a particular job area or an organization or a particular group figuring out what they want you to talk about. We often call these information interviews. Holden's a great place to do this. There's lots of people here with lots of good stories to tell. Actually going and learning the language that teachers or counselors, or artists, or bankers actually use? What kind of buzz phrases are they going to use or want to hear from you? How can you actually take your experience and make it sound like something that someone else is going to want on the job? We ask, and I suggest to people in terms of information interviews, that you go do that before you walk into a job interview, that you've done that in advance. We used examples the other night when we did a staff version of this workshop, where people said, "I had no idea which area of student development I wanted to get into, college student development." And this person actually went around and talked to different people, somebody who worked in housing, somebody who worked in campus activities, somebody who worked in counseling. Another example is engineering. I've worked with a lot of students who said, "I want to be an engineer." Well, there's a lot of different kinds of engineers. And when I walk in to interview at a civil engineering job, I better know why I want to be a civil engineer as opposed to any of the other choices. So again, to think about how can I take my experience, my skills, and transfer them from setting to setting is a third rule. I'll give you one more tip, I guess, or other thing that I would talk about with skills before we move on. This is something that I require students to do that I work with in college settings, and it's certainly not limited to them. But a way to get at your skills and to do a real assessment of your skills is to take something that I call a vocational history. Has anybody done this? Heard of this? Okay. Vocational histories really involve going back and literally thinking through, this will be a tough task for those of you who've had lots of jobs, but to go back and think about all of the jobs that you've had, I mean every job, back to being a babysitter when you were a teenager, and actually listing them all down. And then for each of those jobs, to think about several things in terms of skills and abilities. First, what were your duties? What did you actually do on the job? And that's usually something that most of us can do pretty readily. Secondly, to think about the skills that we've used. And when we talk about skills, we're talking about buzzwords. Like plan, organize, research, budget. You can read these as I go. Again, real action words, things that you actually did on that job. All right. Also, it's important for any position that you've had or job that you've held to think about skills that you learned. What did you pick up on that job that you didn't know before? The key to that and the difference between these two is what I was talking about a second ago with transferable job skills.
to be able to say, yes, I learned something in that particular setting, in that particular position that I held that will be useful to me. And then finally, to talk about major accomplishments. Think back to that position. What did you do that was worthwhile? If you know something about the field that you're looking at, maybe that'd be helpful in terms of measurement. If, for instance, you're applying for a job as a teacher, to be able to say, yes, I babysat for 20 years and never had a major accident, that would probably be a pretty good thing, right? To be able to talk about major accomplishments is something, again, that many of us cannot do. For any job you've had, there's got to be some accomplishment. Did you learn something? Did you create the first, the best, the most? Did you balance the budget for the first time? Did you change the face of the planet? What did you do? And again, to figure out that, be able to write it down in terms of this vocational history, and that will lead you to be able to talk about it as you walk on and try to think about different ways that you might want to be using your skills. Anyone done anything like this? Have you done these? Okay, good. The wonderful thing about these, and what I will guarantee if you do this kind of thing, is that it's real helpful in terms of resume writing as well as interviewing, because it's all right in front of you. It's also a useful self-exploration exercise as you sort of take a look at yourself. Finally, then, let's spend just our last few minutes together talking about values. And this is really, I think, the area that is probably the cloudiest in terms of this model, but also the most important in terms of that overall theme that we're covering today about life and career coming together. What we know about values, as I mentioned in the beginning, is that often values really are simply what we believe about particular work that we might pursue in life, those things that we hold sort of strongly or as important. And we know that in terms of work, there are specific kinds of values that we can look at, that we can consider. Can you see these, everyone, if I hold it like this for just a second? If you look at this list, this is a pretty standard list. I mean, taking from several different kinds of research instruments, if you will. But these are the particular kinds of areas that we might look at. And basically, when we look at work values, we ask the question, what's important to you in work? What are you not willing to live without? And work values can often, I think, make or break someone's happiness or productivity or satisfaction with a particular job. And yet, it's the area of this model that most often, I think, gets set by the wayside. A lot of times when I talk with college students, they can tell me what they're interested in, what they're good at, but they can't tell me what it is they really want or what's important to them in their lives. It's a real common thing. What you can see as you look at this list, it gets at things like, do you need to work by yourself? Do you need to work with other people? Do you like to have direction? Do you not like to have direction? Do you like things to stay the same, or do you want them to be very, very different at different points in your career? Is making a lot of money and making sure that things are always going to be stable important, or do you do okay with having some, having some what?
Financial
difficulty. Exactly. Okay? So for instance, if someone told me that they have a real high need for financial stability, and they told me that they wanted to be a stock broker, I would say that's probably not a very good match. Or if someone told me that an important value to them was to have very regular hours and to make a lot of money, and they told me they wanted to be a nurse, I would say that's probably not a very good idea. Okay? And again, this is not what they're interested in or not what they're good at. It's what do you want your life to be like? And these are very specifically related to work, but you can begin to see, I think, how they fall into other areas of life. Can you do this for just a second? Take a look at this list and figure out which ones are important for you. What would you put as 1, 2, 3? What we're driving at here, I think, with that one is, notice I didn't define any of these specifically for you. I talked in circles on purpose. It's not because I'm a bad presenter. It's because that's just what this is about. When you look at a list like this, it's about you defining what's important. I could ask any one of you, how much money do you need to make? What's financial reward? Or what's enough interaction with others? Or what's enough creativity? And every one of you would have a different answer. And I offer this to you as a chance to look at yourself and say, yeah, these are some dimensions. Where do I fall? How am I different than any other person in this room? Any other person who's trying to plan their life? And you are, I guarantee you. What usually happens, again, if we had a lot of time together, this group kept meeting and talking about career and life planning, one of the things you'd start to figure out is, well, I really am different. That guy over there really wants to be creative. That doesn't matter to me. Okay. The other question that a lot of people ask is, or comment when they look at a list like this, and we'll continue talking in the next section here, but a lot of people say, what do I really want to do, where do I think I should be, and where am I really with this list? Is that different for any of you? Some people don't like to admit that X is important, and really when they think Y should be.
Well, yeah. Some of this, I mean, it all sounds wonderful, but when you go out into the real world and work for a job, I guess I was thinking of Terry and his ceramic pottery interests, mm-hmm. and how can he do that financially and obtain the financial security that he needs while he's pursuing. I mean, I've found great difficulty being able to be creative and various occupations that I've had. Mm-hmm. And it's being able to obtain those different values in the real world.
And that's just it. And you bring up an excellent point, because what I would say about this is, this is not like a candy store list. Like, you get to have them all. The reality that you're talking about is that we make choices. And that really, at some level, you start to put number one, number two, number three, and number four on occupations and on life choices. And if creativity truly is important, I don't know if it is for Terry, we're discussing it right here in front of you. If that is important for Terry, then yeah, he might have to give up financial stability. And I'm not making any judgment about your artistic talent. But I think that is a reality about artistic interests. Just what you're saying, that it's not a guarantee. And you do some real creative things to be creative. Real true, though, exactly what you're saying. And so I think that's a reality that I push people to think about, that this is really a list that you need to ponder. This is the pondering. You know, it's not, most people look at this and say, yeah, they're all kind of important at some level, but it's which is one, which is two, which is three, which am I willing to sacrifice for my number one, two, and three? And I'm putting numbers on that. I don't think it's even that clear, by the way. Because the other reality then that I think you're also driving to is you have to go out and get a real job. I mean, at some level you also have to, what job is out there, and there are some realities about this world of work that are very real. You know, I mean, to use an example from my St. Thomas work, we have a seminary there, which is a Catholic seminary, and I say to them, if any of you think that celibacy is going to go away for priesthood, you're wrong. I mean, that is one of these very dark lines, you know, that you're not going to get married, you're not going to have a family. That is a reality about that life choice. So then you figure out, can I fit into that or not? That, I use that as a very extreme example, because that one's probably not going to change. And there's other realities like that. I mean, accountants are going to work at a desk a lot. We know that. Artists are not going to have real steady incomes, necessarily. Some of those kinds of things. And again, what I encourage you with that is to go about thinking and finding out about occupations, asking people about different lifestyles, not being afraid to ask some questions, and recognize that you are unique and it's okay to ask questions. We're doing it for time. Just put it right on. With that, I'm going to take this up in just a second. What I also want to throw out to you then, with that as an overlay, what about life values? Because I think they're different than work values. I think the work ones are real simple. And if you do anything on the scrap of paper, I'd like to have you jot these down, at least in some shorthand. There's only 17 of them. I know, it sounds tougher than it is, but they're simple one or two word phrases. Try these on the side as you look at your life and start to plan. If you had to look at this list, what would you put as number one, the value that is most important to you? And then number two, and number three, and four. And before anyone asks, no, there are no ties for the purpose of this exercise. Is that as simple? I don't know. Let me put up the work value one next to it as you look at that. Go ahead and try it if you can. It makes for some interesting
discussion. I will also guarantee that if we have any couples or spouses in the room, that it's very fun to do this and then discuss it with your spouse. And it doesn't cause big fights, by the way. It's just interesting. Comments on that one? The only comment that I would make is that health that I have here could probably be physical health, to make that one just a little bit more clear. Somebody pointed that out the other day.
Some of socialized sexuality seem to fit into psychological well-being. Okay. Friendship. Okay. They overlap some.
For you. Again, that's perfectly okay to say that, because that would fit very well for me too. I would have done the same thing. But I also, as I have used this list with other people, have them say, no, they're very different from me. Again, the theme of you're unique, you're different. I am not married, so family for me means something very different than for some of you who have children or have a spouse, right? Family to me means kind of an extended family, different. A lot of people will look at this list and say there are some things on there that I could never put at the top. Yeah.
I was thinking about Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and you know, I think as long as you're not financially secure, and it's really hard to think about as a third thing, so world peace and justice for everybody. Mm-hmm. I think it should fit in the picture somehow.
I think it does, but what I would add to that is that I think financial security would be defined differently for different people. Is sort of how I throw it out. I mean, there are people who really don't think about it. I mean, I have several very good friends who do not think about that. I mean, who literally say, let go, let God, and it'll get taken care of. So what I would say about them is that, yeah, at some level it's important. They want to eat and they care about their families, etc. But it's not, certainly not number one. Aesthetic beauty is another one that happens. I put these in random order. But aesthetic beauty is one that a lot of people don't understand. Anybody would put that as number one or two? I didn't understand that, how anyone could, and I met a woman who I worked with who, very interesting, she's a European pharmacist originally in her career, and she came to the United States, became a psychologist, was working at the University of Minnesota. She puts that as number one always. For her, it is just very important to be in very attractive, nice places, and she worries about the environment and nature and her home. She enjoys fixing it up, and she enjoys making her office look nice, and to her that is just very, very important. She has a family, she has children, but that is for her very, very important. She loves art. I similarly have had a lot of people say, how can equality for humankind be, for all of humankind be number one or number two? I also have worked with a woman who is black, who says that is her number one thing. In everything she does, whether that be raising her kids or, you know, doing her job or the causes that she fights for after work, that drives her life. That is an important life value. None of those are wrong. Again, back to our theme that we're just all very different. And that's okay. Those are gifts to be understood. I'm going to wrap up there because we're at the point where we are to stop. But I want to stay and answer questions or hear any comments because we do have some time before dinner. Heavy stuff on an afternoon in the mountains, huh?
Does it take you, what was it, 6 to 8 weeks, you said, an hour a week or hour that you would spend with somebody?
Yeah, probably.
Do you have, is your percentage of successes pretty high, or?
If I can get people, yeah, here, let me answer, that's a good question. If I can get people to go through all these steps, that I just told you about today, that I'm suggesting you go out, and you can do them by yourself, by the way. If I can get people to do that, yeah, it's pretty high.
What if you got somebody that fits into all six of those areas?
Like I said, I think what I would, I think she asked a similar question back here. I would have them look at ways that they could get all those interests met. Can they work with lots of different kinds of people, for instance? Or could they do a job where they got to move to lots of different activities? Or could they do a better career life planning for themselves and say, I'm going to do this in my work and I'm going to do this outside of my work? Or could they maybe do some long-term career life planning where they say, I'm going to do this for now, for a few years, and then I'm going to go do this, and then I'm going to go do that. So I look at options with them.